Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Visa wants to know where you would like to be. Whether you're a super fan or just in it to win your league, Visa knows we want to spend less time standing in line and more time pursuing our passions. That's why for over 60 years, Visa's been adding innovative plays to the way we pay. From tapping to pay to getting paid in 30 minutes or less, they're giving businesses and consumers more tools to do just that. They know that every Visa transaction is a promise. Whether it's a street vendor in front of a stadium or picking up the latest NFL gear online, Visa wants to provide us with the most secure and easy payment experience possible so everyone, everywhere can get to where they'd like to be. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
All right, as you are well aware by now, I can relate almost anything in sports to my favorite television show of all time, The Wire.
Oh, yeah.
The show about drug dealers, police, and politicians in Baltimore. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are Avon Barksdale and Stringer Bell. The old dynasty holding on to its corners by any means necessary. Aaron Rodgers is Omar Little, the baddest man in the hood. Russell Wilson is Prop Joe, got the whole West Side on lock. Baker Mayfield is Bubbles.
Oh, no.
Little Kyler Murray is Kennard. Mm. You got Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, and Lamar Jackson out in these NFL streets competing to be Marlo Stanfield. Mm. They want the crown. That brings me to Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins, quarterbacks who face each other Sunday night in a critical showdown for the Cowboys and the Vikings. There's no particular characters I'd compare Prescott and Cousins to. I'm not going to compare them to Nicky and Ziggy from season two in the docks. No, Prescott and Cousins represent the brilliant narrative of The Wire where past was prologue. In season four of The Wire, the season immediately after Stringer's death and Avon's incarceration, the show told you Avon and Stringer's backstories by introducing a group of eighth grade kids who turned into the next generation of Wire characters. Kirk Cousins is Dak Prescott's backstory. They're the same quarterback following the exact same path. Cousins and Prescott are fourth-round quarterbacks who have overachieved and put their teams in the awkward position of wanting to retain them but not overspend for the right to do so. Rather than give Cousins a long-term contract, the Washington Redskins hit Cousins with the franchise tag twice and two seasons in a row, and then they let him walk away via free agency. Cousins is good, but he's never been good enough to justify a mega long-term contract. Mm. Dallas is faced with the same predicament with its overachieving fourth-round quarterback. Dak is good, but he's not worth $33 to $35 million a season for the next 3 or 4 years. The fact that the Redskins really liked but didn't love Cousins occasionally caused the normally mild-mannered Cousins to act out. You remember when he rallied Washington to victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and ran through the tunnel shouting, "You like that?" That was in his fourth NFL season. Dak is now in his fourth NFL season. On Monday night, Dak rallied the Cowboys to a victory over the Giants. After the game, the normally mild-mannered Prescott told USA Today, "There isn't a freaking team in the league that can stop us." And he didn't say freaking. Dak and Kirk are the same guy. They're solid NFL quarterbacks, good players, put the right pieces around them, and they can win games and maybe even win a Super Bowl. But they're not special, and it's a mistake to pay them like they are. They're never going to wear the crown. If I had to compare them to characters on The Wire, they're Bodie and Poot, interesting and likable pawns that will never make it across the chessboard. The game is rigged against them. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts Bucky Brooks and LeVar Arrington. Marcellus, start us off.
Yes.
Fair to say Kirk Cousins' career is proof Cowboys shouldn't overpay for Dak Prescott.
Unfair.
very unfair. One, let's use the context of their circumstances to prove that this is not a fair comparison. Kirk Cousins was on a team with no Super Bowl aspirations at the time of his franchise tag offerings. This is not the same for Dak Prescott, who is on a team that even you say, Jerry Jones is waiting for that next ring. They're built for it. And how are they built for it? They're built by their defense and they're built by their running game. And that lends me to other comparisons that are more favorable for Dak Prescott than one Kirk Cousins. It leads me to the comparisons of a young Russell Wilson, the comparisons of a young Ben Roethlisberger, who were leaning on defense and running games to the tune of a Super Bowl championship, to the tune of Ben Roethlisberger won his first championship, and people said, that's not for you, that's for the Steelers, for everybody else on the team, right? And if you look at it, Dak has more yards per game than Russell Wilson in his first 4 years and a better passer rating than Big Ben. Dak's second most wins in the league since he's been there under Tom Brady. And we're still using lower, lesser comparisons for Dak instead of the more favorable future Hall of Fame comparisons that exist in Big Ben and Russell Wilson. My case has been dropped.
Mm. Look, dropped.
Dang, dismissed.
I just want to, one, I like the Whitlock. That was great, the way that you tied it all together.
Thank
with
you.
The wire. I love the wire. I like that. I just think you have it wrong in terms of Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is a guy that is a franchise quarterback. He has proven that he's a franchise quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Mm. He's winning 66% of his games. Ooh. And so when you compare his plight with that of Kirk Cousins, who is a sub-500 quarterback, it's not the same. And I know they both are fourth-round picks, and you're always looking to replace the guys that come into the league viewed as developmental. But I think the biggest thing that he offers for the Dallas Cowboys, consistency and stability. He's consistent in how he plays. He's stable in his emotions. They know each and every week what they're getting. And I think there's comfort for the Dallas Cowboys knowing they have a quarterback that is going to show up each and every week. And no matter what his strengths are and what his lows are, they still can win around that, I think, and fine.
You pay $35 million for comfort.
I mean, that's the going rate. That's what you got to pay for.
That ain't nothing.
That's what you got to pay for.
It's fair to say that Kirk Cousins is proof that the Cowboys should lose the N in the apostrophe T, lose the over before pay,
yeah,
and put Dak and take away the question mark and put a period. It's fair to say Kirk Cousins' career is proof the Cowboys should pay Dak. That's what I come up with. Here's the thing, right? You're replacing a franchise quarterback and settling Dak into a role where he had to replace Tony Romo, and he's done a fine job of doing that. You see the massive push to solidify this roster so that they can make that run for the Super Bowl. Here's why I say it's unfair to go at Kirk Cousins, all right?
Yeah.
You're talking about a team where they kept franchise tagging him, but the franchise tag situation with him was not based off of his play. It was not purely based off of his play. It was based off of sensationalism, all right? Mm. Can we sell tickets? Does Kirk Cousins move the needle for our poop butt franchise that can't win games, but we were actually pretty decent with Kirk Cousins?
Yeah.
They should have paid the man so that they could try to stabilize their team, but now where are they at since he's left? They're a 1-win team this year in week 9. So it's not fair to say that Kirk Cousins was overpaid. He went to Minnesota. He had a rough start, but now he's winning again. So I'm looking at it from the perspective of, if you're looking at Kirk Cousins, and he did deserve that money when he went to Minnesota because he's doing what he did in Washington. He's winning, and he's winning in an organization that needed that quarterback to win. And you saw what his leaving left. Now, for Dak, you have an opportunity to possibly your first place in the NFC. You have a possibility of going.
NFCs.
And it doesn't matter. They're number one.
In the NFCs.
They're number one. Big win on in prime time against a weak Giants team. But the reality is you got to play who's in front of you. I think Dak is earning his keep. And I'm going to continue to say it's more about the coaches than him.
So I just want to be clear here. One thing I think you do agree with me is that Dak and Kirk Cousins are comparable. You can put them in the same class of quarterbacks.
Don't do it.
What?
You're leading the witness.
He's coercing me. He's coercing me.
It sounds like you agree with me on that. Nope. That they're in the same class, and Marcellus is over here comparing you to Ben Roethlisberger.
I actually think they're comparable.
I'm not comparing them. His numbers are comparing him to them. That's who he is.
Look at how many pieces he's had to work with.
And look how many that Russell Wilson had in the beginning. And look what Ben had in the beginning.
Russell Wilson didn't have these kind of pieces.
Russell Wilson wasn't driving the bus. Marshawn Lynch was driving that bus for Seattle. Marshawn Lynch and the defense. And so that's what it is. But here's what we'll do. We'll make it easy because we'll go back because you want to move on from Dak Prescott. So we'll just go back a couple years and we'll just look at the quarterbacks that were drafted in the first round. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, and then you got Lamar Jackson. So if we compare any of those guys and say, okay, I got Dak Prescott, Baker Mayfield, who would I go? Dak Prescott. Sam Darnold, same thing, Josh Allen.
Dak Prescott.
Like, the only one where we can begin to be like, well, maybe it'll look good if we put Lamar Jackson in the Dallas uniform, maybe. So that's potentially what you're looking at if you say, hey, we'll move on from him and we'll get into the draft and we'll take one of these maybes and a possible and see if we can win a space.
Ooh, but here's where I'll say, even with Lamar Jackson, and this is no shot at Lamar, but
here it comes.
Dak Prescott fits the look of, let's be real, a black quarterback for America's team. Ooh. So if you want to play, if you want to play it real, Dak Prescott fits the profile of what a franchise quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, America's team. And that's what also the markets and the size of the franchise separates Dak Prescott and why he should be paid versus comparing him to Kirk Cousins in this scenario.
You've made an interesting point. I want to go back at Bucky here and Marcellus a little bit here before I get to you. Do you honestly think? Let's just be honest here.
Let's be honest.
Do you think Dak Prescott will ever be as good as Russell Wilson? Be honest.
Oh, I think their careers are parallel. I think you're going to see a swing where this team goes from being Zeke Elliott led to being Dak Prescott led. It's the same thing that happens in Seattle with Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch was the bell cow. He was everything. They go to two Super Bowls. They
led is different than being as good as Russell Wilson or Ben Roethlisberger.
I will answer that, and I will go one greater than Russell Wilson. I'll go Tom Brady. And don't tell me about young Tom Brady.
That's another one.
Because I was in the defensive meetings, and we were like, we ain't got to worry about that 12.
Yeah.
We don't have to until we're like, oh, they just won a Super Bowl. And again. And then you're like, oh. And then you saw the transition. Be respectful. That was a defensive special teams
league. Three out of four.
Okay, but are you trying to tell me Dak is going to be Tom Brady?
I'm telling you there's a possibility because there was a projection. And there was a reality when no one saw Tom Brady coming. There was a reality. No one saw Russell Wilson coming.
You're thinking this Tom Brady. Not the Tom Brady that. 2001,
Rewind
two,
the movie.
Three, four.
Rewind the movie to see him.
Nobody's going to win those amount of Super Bowls. I don't think any quarterback will surpassed Tom Brady and winning Super Bowl.
They said that after Montana at the time.
Yeah,
they said that. I'm just letting you know. You sound like them again.
Yeah.
Just understand. Y'all are arguing that Dak could potentially be the GOAT.
Okay, so we're taking it away. How about Ben Roethlisberger? Because you brought that up.
Let's move Brady off the table.
Ben Roethlisberger, that first Super Bowl that he went to, man, you talk about a team carrying a guy. Carried him. A few years later,
he then
goes and takes that team. Dak Prescott could very well be on the same path where he does that.
And look, y'all want to compare him to Big Ben. Big Ben was a first-round draft pick. Big Ben is still 6'5", 250 pounds.
Projection.
Dak Prescott will never be 6'5".
But he has intangibles that make him
He will
wrong.
Never he have his arm. He'll never have that arm.
He has personnel.
He
might not have the leadership.
Arm.
Now, I'll say this. Ben Roethlisberger had guys like Hines Ward and the bus with him early on in those days to guide him. I don't know who that leader is on this Dallas team. And maybe at this point, maybe that's immaterial because he's got years in. But if he develops, he does have the intangibles to be that type of a quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger or better.
The intangibles top of that mountain. It's not your tangibles. Yeah. Intangibles, because we all walk in the collective sphere of big, fast, strong. We're all kind of bunched up together. But what separates us, as Russell Wilson says, preparation is a separation. If you will die for this sport will love you forever. And Dak shows that level of commitment, as the leader of America's
team. He needs to be developed, though, and I don't know that he's being developed as much as he needs to be.
You got to stop it with the coaches. The guy's out here for 4 years. At some point, he's gotten plenty of playing time. They've given him Amari Cooper. He's got the best offensive line.
He's
got Ezekiel Elliott.
But that doesn't mean he's being developed.
Offensive line either.
Second most wins.
It doesn't mean he's being developed.
But I'm just saying he's
one. Now we're going to dump on Tyron Smith and Zach Martin's
back. Injuries.
Every other week he goes out with a back.
Be real about that. You played O-line. You know how it is.
Consistency, you know, ACL, you know what I mean?
Language. You okay with? We got to talk
through this. I'm saying they're winning two out of every three games.
Him to Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow we, yeah. Big Ben's a Hall of Famer. Russell Wilson's a Hall of Famer. And somehow we got Dak right in there with this is crazy.
Was year four Tom Brady better as a talent than Dak?
No.
Man, well, y'all, it's not even a conversation.
No.
So, as a talent, he's never been better.
It's two different leagues.
It's the same thing.
It's two different leagues.
Oh, and now it's
these systems that are being played now, the way the passing game is now.
But now you're making my point. If you put Dak Prescott in a Bill Belichick ran offense, what is Dak Prescott?
They might have won 5 out of 6.
Imagine.
Drop it again.
Just think about how good Jacoby Brissett.
Put Dak Prescott in New England.
I'm just saying, Jacoby Brissett is great for Bill Belichick.
Matt Castle looked great. I
mean, looked real good.
Jimmy G got $100 million off.
Looking real good right now.
Tom Brady, I just want to issue you an apology.
What are you talking about?
The whole Patriots organization. Your name has been denigrated on
Sully.
Sorry, Tom.
Be smart. Well,
I mean, my God.
Be smart.
Come on. I mean, Dak can get his money, man, $28-29 million. But look, we don't got to compare him.
Oh, you're going to give him $28-29 million. Y'all see what he does there?
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington is back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Eric Mangini. It's time for that dudes.
Yes, sir.
Marcellus, what you got?
It's time to stop beating you up, Jason. And join forces in the trenches, the big uglies. That dudes. Let's start off with number three, Gregory Rousseau. Miami Raising
Canes.
Them boys
turning up.
Had 4 sacks against Florida State yesterday. Dude, my man Rousseau out here balling. Rousseau lined up over center. 6'6", 251. You know he wants to get out of there. He's like, man, I'm over the center. Let me go cross face. You can see him as he crosses face. Now you have the guard and tackle. You got to stay inside of that.
Nice.
If you stay inside of that, you get the pinball effect. Coaches always talk about bang, 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 bang. Stay inside that tackle's inside shoulder.
Get
and get some push. Get skinny in there. Oh, now you know what he did. 7 sacks in his last 2 games. My man Gregory Rousseau, you're number three. That dude production. Of the week. Number two, let's go to Don Terry Poe. Panthers, Poe knows.
He's big.
Beats Jamil Douglas and sacks Ryan Tannehill on this play right here. Poe from Kansas City Chiefs. Y'all remember him. Titan center Jamil Douglas gets his punch in first, and he got it up there. But Poe throws Douglas' hands away pretty easily. And now Poe uses his right arm to clear. Oh, clear the guard. Now he's like a grizzly bear up in there. And this is where you get the sacks. They're not up top, y'all. It's not with the moves up top. It's with the hip turn. Look at that down low. Big man showing you that he is nimble on his feet.
Wax on, wax
I love
off.
It right there. Don Terry Poe, number two. Mm-hmm. That dude of the week. And now let's go to our number one, that dude of the week.
Drum roll.
Chris Jones. Who? Chris Jones. Danced the night away.
Oh, my
Vikings
God.
Vikings guard Pat Elflein into Kirk Cousins for the sack. Oh, they're going to hand fight off the snap, but Jones wins that. Now he has Elflein back on his heels. Legs have no power. Two number two pencils
out
there.
Oh, not
number
two.
Man, he can't be straight up and down. All the leverage and starts driving them backwards. You know what he start doing? He start thinking about his favorite artist, at least mine. Michael Jackson, it's time to start moonwalking.
Oh,
look at him right here.
Oh, no.
Kirk Cousins, look out for me.
Man,
man, Chris Jones using all that power, that thrust. And now it's time to take on the prom, baby. You know what? It's going to dance the night away. Look at this. Kirk Cousins like, I can't get no passes off with you in my face. Chris Jones out there beasting. Dance the night away, big dog. You know who you are. Number one, that dude of the week.
Wow. Awesome. Great job, Marcellus.
Wrong with a K.
Wow. All right, time now for a big story. Let's move to Jacksonville, where the Jaguars named Nick Foles a starter when they return from the bye week next week. Ending Gardner Minshew's magical run, Minshew kept the Jaguars' season alive, going 4-4 in Foles' absence, all while capturing the hearts of the nation with his mustache, over-the-top personality, and some exciting play. But now Jacksonville will see what they have in Foles, who they handed a big contract in the offseason. All right, the question here is, guys, think the Foles-Minshew quarterback controversy is over?
Oh, it's over.
Look, you're going to look at Nick Foles differently because of the play of Gardner Minshew, which was good, but not good enough. This is a guy who had an opportunity to steal that job. But when you have that opportunity, you have to violently take it away, assault the opportunity. Because if you leave anything up for chance, a Super Bowl winning quarterback who's making over $20 million a year is going to win that battle. So that's what happens here simply. And if you really want to get into the numbers, what doomed him internally was the turnovers. Minshew lost 7 fumbles, 11 overall. Who else is losing a lot of fumbles, but is no harm's way of their job security? Daniel Jones lost 8, 10 overall. So when you're in that conversation of being a turnover machine and you're a stopgap player, you're going to lose your chance.
Yeah, when you're the 6th pick in the draft or when you've got $50 million guaranteed, you've got a pretty significant head start over anybody. And the Jaguars are in a position where they have to go and see what Nick Foles can do. There's obviously a organizational commitment. There's a history of success in the postseason with him. They're hoping that that carries over throughout the course of the entire regular season. And as nice a job as Minshew did, the turnovers, they're hard to accept, especially if you have such a viable alternative and an alternative that you've committed so strongly to. You have no choice but to put Nick Foles in.
I think that's the sensible corporate approach, what Coach and Marcellus are speaking of. But we're talking about controversies don't generally come from the upstairs areas. They come from inside the locker room, and they come from the fanatics, right? So this is not over, not by any means, not by a stretch. It may have been settled in terms of ROI on the contract that's been given. He won Super Bowls. Let's see what he can do. But the fans are going to want to see, can Nick Foles come back and provide that spark that Minshew provided when they needed him to do so? So if Foles doesn't come back and play at a high enough level to quiet down the conversations, those conversations will get louder and progressively more louder and more pronounced and maybe heard if Foles doesn't play up to his standard.
Yeah, I think that Nick Foles at 30 years old, as opposed to a young kid on a rookie deal, the controversy is not over. Unless Nick Foles goes out and plays really well. But can I see them in early December reassessing if things aren't going well and going back to Minshew? Absolutely.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Let's move to Seattle, where Russell Wilson is putting up some of the best numbers of his career en route to a 7-2 record. But not everyone is thrilled with the Seahawks' start. With the Seattle Post-Intelliger, Ben Arthur claiming in a new column that the Seahawks are too dependent on Wilson and the offense to pull out wins week after week. And there's no question this defense is a far cry from the Legion of Boom, near the bottom of the league in points per game, total yards per game, and passing yards per game. All right, the question here is, do you agree with Ben Arthur? Are the Seahawks too dependent on Russell Wilson?
Not at all. What we're seeing are the results in the transition of power from that Legion of Boom and that defensive-centric team to now you have a quarterback who's playing at an MVP level and a lot of young assets that are trying to blossom. Let's talk about the defense. We all saw some of the numbers, know some of the numbers. Not good for them defensively, especially by expectation and the Legion of Boom standard. But they also have a quarter of those defensive starters that are under the age of 25. So this is a young group that is trying to mature. Meanwhile, a lot of assets have been poured offensively to try and support what Russell Wilson is doing, which is amazing. So in that transition of power, you got to use what you have, and sometimes patience is the virtue that you must example. So I'm not buying that this team is too dependent on Russell Wilson because they made the transition because they knew they could trust in Russell Wilson. Now that's occurring, and we're saying that they went too far. Mm. That doesn't make sense.
And people get really spoiled when they're used to looking at one thing for a long time. They expect it's always going to be this way. And they made a major overhaul, major transition last year. And the fact that they were able to go to the playoffs the way that they did, which nobody really expected, was pretty incredible. And Pete's done a good job of this throughout his coaching career, wherever he's been, of being able to overhaul systems, take chances, bring in guys that aren't necessarily thought of as the perfect fit and make them work. And he's doing that. Offensively, it's the commitment to the running game they've had. Last year, they were first in the league in rushing, and Russell Wilson had his highest quarterback rating ever. And this year, they're eighth and they're ninth in passing. So there's a more of a balance.
Yeah.
Last year, they were 27th in passing. But the fact that they're committing to consistently running the ball has helped Russell Wilson substantially. And I remember last year when they were talking about you're relegating him to being a game manager. And that wasn't the case at all. It actually helped him be more effective because of the things that it opened up.
I'm going to piggyback off of that. I wrote down the name Terry Bradshaw, and he's a part of our show because he's a part of that whole gambling deal that we do, win your money. You look at that team, it created an entire identity for an entire city. You had the Steel Curtain, and you had Terry Bradshaw, who had Rocky Blyer and Franco Harris in that backfield, right? Yeah. You're not putting too much on Russell Wilson, because for the same reasons that you look at a team like that legendary Pittsburgh Steelers team, that Legion of Boom, those Super Bowl teams that won, created an entire identity for that city. Seattle still lives and will always be forever known as the Legion of Boom team, the 12th man. It all was solidified during this time period with Marshawn Lynch. You have Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson. God bless. You still have your franchise quarterback that's a part of your team. They are going to lean on him. That's right. Still their identity. It's almost like a no-win situation because you're looking for Dangerous Russ to be what you created, that identity. You're looking for that, and you're always going to hang your hat on that as long as he is a Seattle Seahawk.
I'm going to defend the author of this story a little bit here and say, because I think his point is, like, I don't think they can win a Super Bowl this way, that there's not enough balance. They're not getting enough from their defense. Mm. They're too reliant on Russell Wilson, and they need more balance from their defense. Where I'll disagree with the writer is, I don't mind them. Russell Wilson's the highest paid player in the league. You should lean into him.
Mm-hmm.
You should put the pressure on him. Where I'm bothered by what Seattle did, I didn't like the Jadeveon Clowney move at the time. I don't think he's that kind of impact defensive player. Russell Wilson, if you're going to lean into him, give him more assets. They've now made the desperate move of going out and getting Josh Gordon, trying to give Russell enough pieces to carry this whole thing. But if the balance is going to flip over to Russell, give him all the same pieces you gave Richard Sherman with Earl Thomas, with Cam Chancellor, with Bobby Wagner, with Michael Bennett.
That's magic.
They were loaded.
They won't be able
on
to
that defensive
that.
Side. Well, again, I'm just saying, give Russell the necessary. If he's got to carry it, give him what he needs. Mm-hmm. Don't make the Jadeveon Clowney move. Go out and get you a real offensive lineman or another pass catcher. Josh Gordon is a desperation move because they know they are totally relying on Russell Wilson, and we got to give him even more help.
I don't know how you can defend the author and then say that it's a bad move to go try to solidify a defense that's having problems. If you're saying take the pressure off of Russell Wilson, the defense isn't holding up their end of the bargain, and then you're mad at them for going to try to improve
Clowney
the defense.
Help. Okay. I didn't like the Clowney move at the time.
But that's your perspective.
Yep.
But it still is a move to solidify a weak area of the team and take pressure off of the quarterback. And you look at Josh Gordon, that's not a desperation move. That's a lottery ticket. If it hits, it's great. If it doesn't hit, what have they lost? There's very little money in them. They didn't have to give up anything to get them. So if it works, great. If it doesn't work, they're no worse off than they were before they got them. I think that's a sound move. And Pete's done that consistently where he'll take some chances. Dwayne Brown. To get him. He'll do some things that aren't traditional and a little bit out on a limb. And typically he makes them work.
And to supplement that, You talk about not helping Russell Wilson. Tyler Lockett and him are clicking at an all-time rate. You talk about DK Metcalf being a second rounder who is a stud. And you had the number one rushing attack last year. So that's a balance, even in philosophy. This is a team that is trying to construct a new identity. Unfortunately, if you don't
be able to escape it,
right? If you don't dive into the details, everyone's lazy assumption is the defense is not doing well. They're not going to do well. And that's not their formula. The lack of star power. No one could name the running backs. And it was the number one rushing attack in the entire NFL. So I think they are really suffering from a branding issue more so than a personnel philosophy or execution.
They gave up a lot of points to Tampa Bay.
But remember last year, they were 4-5 and finished up 10-6. That was a team that had a major overhaul. Everybody had considered them dead. And then they had this burst. Young players get better about the middle of the season. You could see some spikes on that defense here as we move on.
Whitlock and Wiley joined now by Fox NBA analyst Chris Haynes. All right, let's move to LeBron James, who is leaving it all on the court so far this season, putting up his third straight triple-double last night, leading the Lakers back from down 19 to beat the Bulls. Meanwhile, crosstown rival Kawhi Leonard is taking a different approach with the Clippers, announcing Kawhi won't play tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks, the second nationally televised game he will have missed so far due to load management. All right, load management versus a guy who's all in trying to prove that he's still the best player in the league in year 17. Whose approach is going to work? LeBron's all in or Kawhi's load management?
Oh, one, let's take the names off the back of the jerseys and let's just react to this proposition. You got an old guy who's going all in. He's sprinting this marathon. And you got a young guy who's like, you know what? I'm just going to pace myself and make sure I'm there at the end. And how you going to lean? You know where you're leaning. You're leaning with the young guy who's going to actually manage this course properly, who just managed this same course properly to the tune of NBA championship. And the thing about LeBron's approach I don't think will work is not just so much does the 35-year-old have enough gas in the tank to make it, because LeBron is supernatural. You know, I respect his game and I respect his psyche and approach to the game. However, he's not being fueled just by LeBron right now, as we saw the tweet last night, washed up king. LeBron has let us get to him to the point where he's going to be fully motivated and in response to what we want, what we are saying, what we're criticizing him about. So here's my last point about this. The first game, Clippers versus Lakers, to me is a microcosm of LeBron's season. He went out there and national anthem was playing. He jumping up. He pumped. I'm about to win LA. And he went out there and scored 8 points, 6 points. Then they went and got some Gatorade at halftime. You know what he came out in the second half? 2 points. 2 points. Tap out. I'm tired, boss. That's what happened in that game. And I think if he keeps this pace, that's going to happen during this season.
Well, let's just have full transparency. Kawhi Leonard is dealing with a lingering knee issue. Not severe, but it's early in the season. The Clippers are going to be cautious. With that being said, as you mentioned, the system has proven to work for Kawhi Leonard. He did it last year in Toronto. All these teams that who were courting him, who actually had a chance to get him, talking about the Raptors, Clippers, and Lakers, they knew going in that there's a program in place for Kawhi. If you want to maximize his potential, there's a course of action. This is part of it. The Lakers would have been doing it. The Raptors, we saw what they did. Now, with all that being said, LeBron James, he's never been someone who's going to come out and say, hey, I'm going to take this game off. I'm not going to play such and such. He wants to play every game. That's not going to happen. The Lakers are going to not shut him down, but Lakers' period of time are going to give him some rest, and it's going to be rest of in situations of where he's not dealing with an injury like Kawhi Leonard. It's going to be rest, just look on the schedule and the strength of schedule and things of that nature. So, you know, LeBron can say that, but it's just out and open with Kawhi. And look, would you rather have him doing this right now in the regular season or when it matters in the postseason? Because I guarantee you there's not going to be any load management in the playoffs.
I'm just listening to you all talk, I'm going to have a different answer than I imagined when this segment started. I think what LeBron's doing is going to work.
I think LeBron, and I don't like what Kawhi is doing. But you kind of shaking me, because if he's got a lingering knee issue, I kind of understand it if that's the case. But two back-to-back nationally televised games like this, I think it's bad for his brand. I think it's bad for the NBA. I don't like it for Kawhi Leonard. What I think LeBron James is doing early in the season, he's putting his demo out there. It's like...
He's listening to my demo.
Yeah, he's putting his demo out. Just reminded everybody, look, you see what I can do when I want to do it. And I think he's going to back off, because he will have proven his point in November, October, November. Y'all know what I can do. Now I can back off. And I just put some testers out on the market. You know, I got that WMD.
I like that.
Comes April or May. I think LeBron's approach is going to work and is actually smart. He needed to back up his critics, particularly coming off the China deal. Mm-hmm. He's left with no choice to change the narrative in the conversation. I'm giving you 40 and 20 and I'm doing this and that. Mm-hmm. He's put out his tweet now. He's done said it to everybody. Mm. And it, you know, it's like early in a relationship, man. You got to put your best work in early, then back off. Save it for anniversaries.
We go out next week. Yeah. Stop talking about going out.
Save it for anniversaries and things the Christmas.
You know what? I love all what you said. And here's the problem with that. LeBron's using our gas to try to fuel him. And I did this when my mama had that 74 Monte Carlo. Uh-huh. And she was like, put some gas in here, $1.38. We broke. You ain't even getting filled up back then. $1.38. I was like, damn, ashtray money. Put regular in an unleaded. You ever did that? Mm. It ain't going far. And he using our gas to put in LeBron's machine? Ooh, it ain't going to go far. China. Oh, y'all said I can't play defense. Oh, y'all said last year I couldn't make it through. Okay, see how long you going to ride off of our gas. And what Kawhi's doing is exactly on brand. Every team knew this. Every fan knows this. Kawhi's coming, maybe. But Kawhi's going to be there at the end. So this whole MJ fueled by hate, and I use all this criticism to motivate me. If it ain't for you, if that ain't how you built, and LeBron showed year one, Miami, he's not built to be the villain, to always take the criticism and make it a positive. I don't think he's going to last with this approach.
But to get...
Whoa, wait a minute.
Real quick, Marcel, listen, I'm going to be at the game tonight. You know what I mean? This is a potential finals matchup we're going to see. Uh-huh. So I'm disappointed to not, you know, see Kawhi Leonard. I want to ask you straight up. Are you starting to lose some respect for Kawhi, you know, doing his load management?
Absolutely not. One, I know one thing about NBA basketball. No one gives a damn about November. So we're not even in a situation where
he's going to the game. He does. I mean, he's a ticket holder.
We understand. But look, if you talk about value for dollar, you're mad you spent your money, but you respect the value you'll get back. If this Clippers team that has never won a championship finally puts themselves in that position, it's not about being nearsighted. It's not about short term. It's about the long haul, and it's a marathon.
Well, there are some fans who won't respect that process because they've only had one or two opportunities to go to a game during the regular season. Mm. And although they may be Clipper fans and rooting for the Clippers as a whole, they can't afford to go to the playoff games. Mm. They can't afford to go. And so you do feel for them, and it's not an easy situation for anybody. But I will say this. The league knows about this. The league contacted the Clippers to see what's going on. He's dealing with a lingering knee issue. This is not anything like it was out.
To LeBron's teammate Anthony Davis, who made waves in his hometown of Chicago this week, telling a crowd, quote, it's a possibility he would consider joining the Bulls next season. But yesterday, the Brow tried to walk back his comments.
You said last night at that event that you consider Chicago as a place for free agency.
I never said I consider anything.
What did you say?
I said that, you know, I'm focused on the championship with the Lakers. And, of course, everyone knows I'll be a free agent next year. And I said, we'll see where it goes.
All right, is this something or nothing?
You know this is something, man. Oh. Come on, man. Who was he at? The Boys and Girls Club? You act like, Brian Gumbo was there with the glasses on the tip of his nose. He over there with kids. He just want to know how much money you make and, you know, where you get those shoes and can I get a pair? And he over there dropping these bombs. I tell you why. This is a guy who knows what his money's going to look like in both situations. So it's more than money that he's considering. Why is it a possibility? I give you a few reasons. One, as I was recruited to go to Columbia, coach said, do you want to go somewhere and carry the torch or go somewhere and light the torch? Mm-hmm. Would you rather be the one that connects the Michael Jordan era of greatness in Chicago to what you can do, Anthony Davis, in your hometown? Or be the 25th best Laker in history? Yeah. And that's what's going to happen if he goes down here. Also living in the shadows of LeBron and having to deal with the shrapnel that comes from whatever LeBron is dealing with and whatever falls on your lap. Who knows how this ride will go? And this is not about their personal relationship. It's about the effect of his legacy and on his legacy, but playing with LeBron. Who wants to be the sharer of this greatness when you know you can go somewhere and be the carrier of it all?
You're just hoping for chaos.
I mean,
there's nothing there. There's nothing
that
there.
That answer?
Let me give you an example.
All right.
A few years ago, my partner grew up with, started his podcast. You know, starting it from scratch. No following, no nothing. He said, can you come on and be my guest? I'm like, sure, I get on. So me and him, we talk all the time. Mm. So I'm getting too comfortable where I'm talking, I'm saying some things that I probably shouldn't have said.
Mm.
The next thing I know, what I said is being aggregated on these NBA sites. Mm. And I'm like, oh, shoot. I'm like, oh. But the point is, I said it in a small venue, just being a little bit just too careless and too comfortable. Mm. Anthony Davis was talking with kids.
But it's what you believe. You said what you believe.
Ooh. I said what I would believe, but if it was something that I believe wholeheartedly, I would have had it reported already.
Got you.
You know, so
yeah, got you.
So this is just talk amongst homies.
It's like my Twitter feed. Yeah, no, seriously.
Yeah,
no,
I get you. Yeah.
Don't take it seriously.
That's real. Yeah. That's real. Yeah. So that's the way it was. And so, like with Anthony Davis saying that around a bunch of kids, he just, you know, he's in Chicago. He's in his hometown.
Man, stop.
I'm gonna tell you why. I think what he's basically saying is, I'm here for 1 year to win a championship, and we get this championship, I'm out. I've done my job. I got LeBron his championship. I lived up to what I told Rich Paul and LeBron I would do. And then I'm out of here. I think this is something. I think it's an indication that he's a one and done for the Lakers, perhaps, in his mind. I think that he feels a little bit hoodwinked about what was always promised, from Kawhi Leonard to his number to $4 million he had to give up. And he's like, got a little middle note. I'm going to do this year. I'm going to do this time. I'm going to do it in a way that gives us a chance to win a championship. I want this championship. Mm-hmm. And then I can go home and try to build my own legacy.
It's early November.
Without any shade. Remember, $4 million in the process in pursuit of Kawhi, gone. This is not the first time he mentioned and cracked the door open about Chicago being at home, how it's the mecca of basketball. And just be real. I've been in these situations, and you've been there before when you're talking to the kids. It's a layup. At worst, it's a layup. And they ask you some little softball question, and you go there? Why did you go there? Because your intent, what you're thinking about, what's on your mind is going there. He easily could have deflected this conversation, but he went to that place for
you. You don't take Twitter seriously, Woodlock?
No, I do not. Judge my columns, enjoy my tweets. Whitlock and Wiley joined once again by Bucky Brooks and Eric Mangini. The most fearless discussion in sports. All right, let's return to a couple of quarterbacks headed in different directions, Cam Newton and Lamar Jackson. Yesterday, the Carolina Panthers placed Newton on injured reserve, ending his 2019 season and calling into question his future as a franchise quarterback moving forward. Over the course of his 9-year career, Cam reached the highest of highs, winning the 2015 MVP award and carrying the Panthers to the Super Bowl during that same season. Cam played in 3 Pro Bowls, earned first-team All-Pro one time, and has earned roughly $110 million. It's a rock-solid professional career, but I don't think anyone would argue that Cam reached his full potential. He won the Heisman Trophy, was the number one overall pick in 2011, and entered the league with as much hype and potential as John Elway, Peyton Manning, and Andrew Luck. If Cam is done as an elite quarterback at age 30, it's fair to say his physical style of play limited his career. Shoulder surgeries and now a foot injury marred his prime years. This makes me wonder about Lamar Jackson, who is in the MVP conversation because of his remarkable running style. Just 4 years ago, Cam was 26, dabbing and unveiling the Superman S on his chest. Mm. Is Cam's career the ceiling for Lamar Jackson? We started the show arguing whether Kirk Cousins tells us
all we need to know about Dak Prescott's future? Does Cam Newton tell us all we need to know about Lamar Jackson? All right, guys, Marcellus starters out. Is Cam Newton's career the ceiling for Lamar Jackson?
No, it's not. Not at all. We have to use our imagination when we talk about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson is just different. Cam Newton came into the league. There's a false bravado you get when you're built like Adonis. You think that you can bring the contact, bring the pain, because you can deal with the pain. And I remember talking to Warwick Dunn when he first got in the league and looking at him. I was like, how you going to do it? I seen you do it at Florida State, but how you going to do it? And then I watched him play. And then I played against him, and I realized you're never going to get a clean hit on him. When your feet are in the air to make contact, his feet are still on the ground, dodging that same contact. So I look at Lamar Jackson as this, like, gumbo of a Warwick Dunn's mentality, would have an RG3 in the room haunting you and reminding you of the physicality of this game, and a Cam Newton to make sure that you're not deluded in thinking that you're going to win these contests in terms of contact. And then Mike Vick just sitting there mentally, a fully prepared Mike Vick, as Mike Vick has went on record, said he wasn't prepared in Atlanta. And then he had a balanced attack when he got to Philly. And I think all of those mindsets are now coming together in one Lamar Jackson with a different skill set. And by the numbers, let's not even have this comparison. I love me some Cam Newton. Y'all know I do. But in his MVP year, we're still seeing a more accurate, better runner in Lamar Jackson than Cam Newton.
Thrower.
More accurate. Yeah, more
accurate. You said runner.
More accurate, more accurate passer and a better runner than Cam Newton in his MVP year. In career versus Lamar Jackson's career, no major statistical categories where Cam is looking better than what Lamar Jackson showed you in this short run.
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying about looking like an Adonis and having that false bravado. something I've had to deal with for a long time. I think the issue here is this is an incredible fit. The fact that Lamar's with Greg Roman is the perfect fit. Greg Roman put this system into play and did it very well with Colin Kaepernick. And this is the same system. I was on that staff. I saw how it worked. And Greg Roman is one of the best that I've ever been around in terms of scheming up the running game and especially scheming it up for a running quarterback. Now, let's say Greg Roman gets a head coaching job because of the success that they've had. I don't know if another offensive coordinator is going to have that type of fit with Lamar Jackson. So that's one concern I have. As a runner, he is a very physical runner, and he takes a lot of hits, and that eventually is going to take a toll on him. Deshaun Watson, to me, is a better runner, and I thought he was a better runner in college as well. And he doesn't take nearly the same type of hits in the open field that Lamar does. All that being said, if the whole stadium knows you have to pass and the defense knows you have to pass and you've got to win the game doing that, can he do that? If the defense doesn't hold up and they're down by a lot of points, can he win the game throwing the football? And that's a question that's going to have to be answered. After that's answered, what's his evolution going to be like? And as a passer, because at the end of the game, passing the ball is what wins in the NFL.
Very quickly, Eric, before we get to Bucky, Marcellus's point, and one I agree with, is Lamar doesn't run as physically as Cam Newton. You think he does?
Yeah, I think he does, and I think that the designed runs that they have him run are a lot more physical in nature. They're in between the tackle type
run.
They're not all in between the tackle, but there's enough. And putting that extra pounding on a quarterback over time takes a toll, and it's different than when you're a running back because you don't have to drop back and pass. You don't have to control the huddle. You don't have to assess coverages.
I think this is part of an evolution that we're going to see in the National Football League. And I think there are more Lamar Jacksons that are available than Tom Brady's in terms of when you look at the high school game, you look at the college game, and you look at the way that college product delivers its prospects, there are more guys that play like Lamar Jackson. So I think what we have to do is we're going to get at a crossroads where NFL teams are going to have to look at the quarterback position a little differently than maybe they looked at it previously. Instead of thinking, hey, I want a guy that can be like Tom Brady that can play for 15 to 20 years, maybe it's he can play his rookie contract, another contract, and then we have to find another one. When you look at what Baltimore is doing in terms of the way they're building their quarterback room, all of those guys play alike. Trace McSorley, RG3, Lamar Jackson. So when you make that commitment that we're going to build around a running quarterback, you have to go all in. But you also have to know that that cycle is more collegiate in nature when you're building your
and
team.
And so, Bucky, you're kind of arguing my point. Cam Newton seems to be kind of on the decline at 30.
Yes.
And so the ceiling may be Cam Newton. 9 years may be
nine or 10 years. And I think from a team building standpoint, if you know that, look, I can get 9 great years from a guy that is athletic, then maybe we
at
build it.
At any position, you love it.
Then we build it a little differently. It gives us an opportunity, if we think about the salary cap, and we don't know what the cap is going to be, but cost efficiency has been quarterback on a rookie deal. Let's figure it out, build a team around it, and do it. So now you just have to cycle it differently. I think to Coach's point, you may have to dig into the college ranks to find those offensive coordinators who can deal with these kind of quarterbacks. Because the old school NFL coordinator may not be able to continue to come up with creative ways to use them in the running game.
We don't have the proper context to know the ceiling of the running quarterback because we never had the acceptance fully of the running quarterback. This is the first time we saw commitment, not only in who you are as a player and your attributes, but the actual organization trying to support that and their offensive coordinator trying to run that philosophy. So we can look back and look at a Steve Young who was maybe a little ahead of his time. But if you look at Steve Young, it's interesting being a running quarterback, being accurate but not deadly accurate. His accuracy is the same as Lamar Jackson's right now.
I'm just getting 5 percentages, but it's a whole different league.
Oh, and that's
a whole different
league. And that's the beauty.
Steve Young's probably the most accurate quarterback the NFL's ever seen, but go ahead.
I would disagree with that, yep. But we can have that conversation later. I will say that he wasn't even fully supported. He had to run against apprehension internally before he even dealt with the defenders. Lamar Jackson's not going to face that. So now we're going to see, as you said, the next are coming. And I don't understand this, and I'm a former defender. Why wouldn't you want your quarterback to have these attributes? Is it just because you're stuck?
No, I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why.
One, because they all get hurt.
No, the fear of injury is one. But they all get hurt. The number one reason, I'm just telling you, for me at the collegiate level, there was going to be 3 or 4 times a game where I was going to see stars. I would imagine at the NFL level, the guys that are in regular contact see stars regularly. Quarterbacks, it's one thing for an offensive lineman, a defensive lineman, a running back to see stars and to be lightheaded. It's a different one from the quarterback who has to turn around, get the play call, think about what 11 guys are going to do, think about what the coverage is going to do. You can't be regularly seeing stars and operate efficiently at that position. And every time you run that guy out there as a runner, if you do it 12 times a game, I guarantee there's about 3 or 4 times he's going to be seeing stars after the play. And it is, in addition to when he gets hit in the pocket, I just think that's where turnovers happen. I know this guy hasn't done a lot of turnovers,
right,
but that's what concerns me is just you're trying to have a chess match with the defensive coordinator, and the quarterback is a part of that. It's hard to do it when you're out there running, exerting that kind of energy as a runner.
And I disagree with the narrative that we haven't seen this. Colin Kaepernick and this system, that was the system. The system we're seeing now was the system that we ran in San Francisco. So this isn't some revolutionary new idea. And the running quarterback has taken a much more prominence, I'd say, in the last 5 to 10 years than they ever did. So I don't totally agree that things are changing that dramatically. But at the end of the day, it's a passing league. And when your defense can't hold up and you're down by 14 or you're down by 17, can you drop back to pass, throw the ball, and win the game consistently?
Why is it at the end of the day it's a passing league when the beginning of the day was a running league and they told us that when it was a running league, it's not a passing league.
They changed all the rules and guess to what, make it a passing league.
And guess
league.
What? They changed them before. They could change them again.
It's
supply demand.
LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Baker Mayfield, whose season just keeps going from bad to worse. Baker has spent his entire career talking trash to anyone who would listen, but now he's the one being called out on a regular basis by people around the NFL, including Dolphins cornerback, former Rams cornerback, Aqib Talib, on The Herd yesterday.
I just think as he matures in the NFL, he'll be able to go through his reads more. He's more of a one-read guy. He's going to read right now and start scrambling. And he even could work on the scrambling. The scrambling is always to the right. We had it in our game plan. He's going to scramble to the right. He's going to look at one receiver, and he's going to scramble to the right. So our rush plan was was gauged for somebody to scramble to the right. So when we looping guys to our left so they can meet him when he scrambles to the right.
When I heard this yesterday on the Herd, my first thought was like, oh man, it's open season. Current NFL players don't talk this transparently about current NFL players. Baker Mayfield, all that smoke has attracted smoke. I think his peers in the NFL, he's alienated himself from his peers in the NFL.
And I hear something different. I hear two things. One, the price of fame, and two, a self-fulfilling prophecy that happens when you look for problems, you will find them no matter what. So let's give you the proper framework. When you're successful at anything, everything will be average to good. We will round it up. When you're not doing well, we'll round it down. And what's happening right now is we're rounding it down. Case in point, talk shows you go on, they don't want to hear about every quarterback. They want to hear about certain quarterbacks, famous quarterbacks. So therefore, when you talk about a famous quarterback that's struggling within that framework, we're going to round it down. And that's what Aqib did. When we're talking about someone who's doing well, we're going to round it up. We're going to go with that flow and that herd. So there's two things that are at play. One, the quarterbacks that really are horrible, that don't have that star quality, we don't even bring them up. So we don't know how bad it is against them amongst their peers. But when you have a guy in this moment, when you can kick him when he's down, no one's even kicking. They just taking another step. It's matter of fact. This is what he does that is leading to his failure. So I didn't read it like that. Mm. I read it like when you are somebody, you better stay somebody. Because when you turn into anything less, oh, the avalanche is coming.
Well, I think for Baker Mayfield, I think you have a bunch of different things at play. But I think from a player and even from an evaluation standpoint, you have guys that didn't really believe that he was a number one overall pick because he didn't necessarily fit the prototypes. The guys that we've typically seen go number one overall, the Andrew Lucks, the Cam Newtons, they had certain physical traits that enabled you to be like, oh, okay, I can see him being the best in the game. When you look at Baker Mayfield, what was his special quality? He wasn't athletic like a Michael Vick. No. He didn't have size like Andrew Luck and those other guys. He had arm talent, but he wasn't exceptional when it comes to his arm talent. So now what you're seeing is a correction. When you're number one overall, people expect you to be able to make all things right. And he doesn't have the talent to make the Cleveland Browns right. That's what we're seeing on the biggest stage.
Mm. The popularity and the fame connected to him is alienating him. It certainly is. And it's for no other reason than the lack of production. When we're talking about what Aqib Talib said, well, look at it from this angle. He's not a proven star in the NFL.
Yeah.
What has he done? What would give us reason to bless you to talk about him in a way where we're putting him in, and you mentioning the quarterback's names that we want to hear. We want to hear Baker Mayfield's name. Why? Based off of potential. We want to hear his name based off of the roster that's surrounding him. We're not wanting to hear about him based upon what he's accomplished. And I think that that's where we're running into a real serious, this is like a critical mass situation that's developing with Baker Mayfield, because I'm just wondering, you're looking at his facial expressions and the way he's handling interviews and the way his play is almost like literally, it's taken, it almost looks like an emotional hit. I just wonder, can he hold up, forget alienating himself with his style, is his style rapidly deteriorating him emotionally enough where he can't be successful for himself and his team?
He's definitely shook.
Yeah.
I'll say this, Marcel, to your point, and this isn't a great analogy, because like Trubisky, was he the number two pick?
Yes.
Yeah, the number two pick. If Trubisky had been as brash as Baker, if he had done like what Josh Rosen did on draft day, there's 9 mistakes made in front of me, I think people would be coming at Mitch Trubisky the way they are Baker Mayfield. He's brought this level of smoke on himself. Because I think if you ask anybody about Trubisky right now, a current player, they would dodge and, you know, say
current
halfway
players
polite.
Haven't taken shots.
Yeah.
But everyone else, we've begun.
Well,
we've started to take shots at Trubisky as well.
Yeah. Let's just be real. One, Mitch Trubisky did win 11 games last year in the playoffs and should have advanced if the kicker makes the kick. So we're sitting there like, Baker Mayfield, broke Peyton Manning's passing touchdown record as a rookie. So we can't act like he hasn't done something. Not enough in the pot, but something. But this is almost like celebrity driven. This is not about his brass
style. That's why they firing off on him.
They firing off because he is popping. This is clout chasing one-on-one, and we are all guilty of it. Look, when you hear of a celebrity cheating, you're like, oh, my God. You talk to somebody, he's the devil. He's the worst person. And then you go outside, and no one cares that your neighbors are cheating. And hey, Bob, you know, you look past normalcy to find what's up there doing the same damn thing that you're doing. So we don't care about Mr. Trubisky. Respect the Colin Cowherd, my boy. If a kid come on our show, we ain't talking about Mr. Trubisky. We talking about Baker Mayfield, bro. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to hear the dirt on Mitch because no one's even digging for Mitch. But they're digging for Baker, and he's giving them ammo.
And also, just an added piece to that is the whole OBJ factor.
Yes.
I told y'all this when I was first coming on the show. OBJ's brand exceeds the NFL. He's not having a great year, but his brand is not taking a hit. I hope y'all know that. His brand is just fine.
Yeah.
We may not be looking at him favorably like, oh, best receiver, this and that. Yeah. But he is on, he's in a whole nother stratosphere as a brand. And Baker Mayfield might be a target on that as well. You talking about clout chasing. I'm going to clout chase you because I may not even be able to get your homie. I might not be able to go head-to-head and go toe-to-toe and win with OBJ, but I dang sure come your way because I know you ain't got it the way that he do. They might be going after him. He might be guilty by association.
I think one thing that you can relate to, you're a top-five pick. When you are drafted as a top-five pick, the expectation is you're going to be a gold jacket guy. That performance and those expectations start from day one. At some point, Baker Mayfield has to deliver.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Kirk Cousins.
All right, Neil Armstrong, who's your big dummy of the day?
Neil Armstrong. Hey, man, big dummy of the day goes to the person that said, enjoy my columns and judge my tweets.
Yeah, say that. Say
look,
that.
Man, you don't write columns no more, and nobody likes your tweets. What the hell that mean?
All right, let's talk Kirk Cousins.
Two a day on this show.
Who heads to Dallas for a showdown with Dak Prescott and the Cowboys Sunday night. Cousins has struggled in primetime games, going just 6-13 in his career. Marcellus, you think he puts an end to those struggles Sunday?
Struggle in primetime. Forget that. Let's just talk about playing against winning teams. 5-25 in his career. 1-2 this year. And one of the losses is to the Chiefs with Matt Moore. I don't care if it's primetime or not. If it's a good team, chances are you should bet against Kirk Cousins. I think he's in trouble.
I'm betting on Kirk Cousins this week to break this streak. I'm just now thinking about maybe the stupidity of that. But anyway, Uncle Jimmy.
Your money gone.
Well, your thoughts on Kirk Cousins, who I compared to season 4 of The Wire.
Nephew?
Yeah.
I need your help a little bit.
Yeah.
All right.
How in the hell did you get Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins mixed up in an analogy of The Wire?
Can we say that again?
It worked.
Look, man, you got to admit, that's a hell of a stretch.
Yeah, it was.
That's a bigger stretch than that pair of Spanx you got on right now.
He got the Spanx on.
Black. Triple X.
Look here, man. Look here, man. I'm going to tell you something, man. Here's what I'm going to say about my man Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
What you going to say? Look, man, the obvious comparison for Kirk Cousins is the most famous Kirk in television history.
Uh-oh.
Captain James T. Kirk.
I know. Oh, here we go.
Oh, that's
from the Star Trek Enterprise.
Yes.
The original.
Yeah.
Not that Deep Space Nine crap. Yeah.
Fake.
Look, Captain man, Kirk. I love me some Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Space.
And to be honest with you, nephew, he reminded me a lot of you.
Really?
Meaning he wasn't perfect.
Okay.
And every week he would go down to some Klingon-infested Coliseum and almost get himself and everybody else killed.
Himself.
And then what he got to do? He got, hoo-dee-hoo, hoo-dee-hoo,
hoo-dee-hoo.
Then he got to call Scotty, Mr. Spock, Uhura, who was fine, okay? All of them to get his ass out of trouble. Okay, but the fact of the matter was, he had the ability to delegate.
Power.
Yeah. And that's why he's the captain. And that's why he gets paid like a captain.
Uh-huh.
Just like Kirk Cousins. He run out there, get his ass in a little bit of trouble. What'd he do? He calls up the homies. Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! Stephon Diggs, Dalvin Cook, John Randall, What? Randy Moss. What? All them OGs coming running. Coming to the rescue.
No, they don't. No, they
don't. And what happens? Captain Kirk gets paid. Just like you in this show, nephew. Say what you want to. Captain Kirk Cousins is a leader.
Yes.
You ever heard his pregame speech?
No, what?
For real. Listen, it goes like this.
Please. Quickly.
Quarterback logs. Start 8. Week 10. We have arrived at a strange and distant land. It's called Jerry's World. As I prepare to boldly go where no other mediocre quarterback has gone before, Super Bowl. The Super Bowl. First, we must conquer the dreaded Klingon and the dreaded Cowboys and their diabolical leader, Jerry Jones. I've been waiting all day for Sunday night. And I know you think that the bright lights of primetime daze and confuse me, but I am ready to once again step up to the world and say, y'all like that? Do you like that? Okay, then. I love right. Some Kirk Cousins.
Let me give my approval rating for Kirk Cousins. I got him at a 60.
You like that, Dorkless?
I raised him up 8 points to a role player.
You like that?
I got him up to a role player.
Just tuck your chain in, man. Stop putting us back like that, astronaut. I don't know what I got to do at 65. I'm around the same with you. Come on, Kirk. Make us all wrong, man.
All right, the internet has him at a 48% as a scout team.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to The Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.